These beings from outer space wanted to have sex.
This is the Extra Extra Hot Crate Podcast, Episode 55, Series Starter Kits. I am agreeable ancient astronaut theorist David T. Cole, and I'm here with especially heinous Sarah D. Bunting.
Chung Chung.
And communist caricature Tara Ariano.
I eat stars and stripes. Welcome to Extra Extra Hot Crate. Thank you to all of you out there for your support. This topic comes to us from one of you named Nicole Hancock, who writes, each of you could pick a show and then give your five most essential slash favorite episodes from that show. Discuss why they are in your top five. Then I can take notes for next time I have the flu and need to watch the best of something. This suggestion was made many, many months ago before flu was something that we were trying not to talk about constantly.
R.I.P. Nicole.
Nicole, we hope you are out there listening and that you are feeling very, very healthy.
Thoughts and prayers, but I hope also if you did go into Great Beyond, you didn't cancel your membership before you did.
No. So,
Dave,
we have each picked a show that is available to stream, and we are going to list our five most essential slash favorite episodes to get you started, the ones you should sample to see if it's a show that is right for you to binge. Who shall start? Dave, you want to start?
Okay. Guess what mine is, guys? It's Ancient Aliens, which means it's time, Tara, for the test. Dun, 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 dun. Here we go. Who were they?
Aliens.
Why did they come?
Gold.
What did they leave behind?
Us.
Where did they go?
They're still here.
Will they return?
I just said they're still here.
Correct on all accounts.
I used to be able to do this with my eyes closed.
You correctly answered all the questions asked by the opening credits of Ancient Aliens. Ancient Aliens is a very terrible show that nobody probably should watch, but it's one of those dumb shows that I enjoy. Here's who shouldn't watch Ancient Aliens. Dumb people. Because I knew somebody in my life a few years ago that believed Ancient Aliens actually had a lot of really good things to say. And I was like, it was like Homer Simpson disappearing into the bushes, never to be seen again. But here are the five episodes, if you have never watched Ancient Aliens.
I thought it was just one over and over again.
Any one of the episodes from its 15 seasons.
Oh my God. Why?
Season 3, Episode 7, Aliens, Plagues, and Epidemics.
Oh God.
An episode surely for our times.
Yeah.
Anything that makes people sick in great numbers and can't be viewed by the naked eye is probably caused by extraterrestrial things. That is the premise of this. These include the Spanish flu, the Black Plague. Why? Because when these were happening, and keep in mind, these are all multi-year events, they found reports of some UFO sightings. Therefore, they were probably brought down by the aliens. Mm-hmm. That is the level of discourse and reasoning that you will find throughout Ancient Aliens. Oh, wait, there's more to that one. And so they sort of do this whole thing about pandemics, and then they go to the modern day, and they're talking about these people that like have these skin conditions where they think wires are growing out of these sores, mm-hmm. like actual wire fibers.
Yeah.
It has a name, Morgellons disease.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of them wrote to the CDC to investigate this, and they actually did. And CDC put like a dozen people on it. They brought in Kaiser Permanente to help with the tests and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They found the majority of subjects had drugs in their systems. Over half of them were classified as delusional.
Oh.
And what fibers could be found at the infection points were cotton. So these are the kind of people that we're dealing with.
Oh, dear.
Episode 2. Also is season 3, episode 11, Aliens and the Founding Fathers. This is the episode where I really became enamored with Ancient Aliens.
I've watched this one.
Of course you have.
It's George Washington, Ben Franklin, John Hancock, Zarntram the Merciless, all those guys that built America. It's very indicative of the Ancient Aliens process where they take something that is out there, such as Freemasons built the country, and then like said, but also Freemasons, maybe they were aliens because we just can't see them. So they're probably aliens.
Yeah.
Maybe Washington was an alien, but maybe he was just in cahoots with aliens that he knew.
Right. Yeah.
Skipping ahead. Season 7, episode 8, from which I got the opening quip, Alien Breeders.
Oh, God.
Civilization only happened because aliens did the nasty with early humans and made them smart. It's basically the plot of Battlestar Galactica.
Sure.
Fourth is season 10, episode 10, The Alien Wars. Now, they forgot to mention there was Alien Wars until the 10th season. But in the 10th season, they now say, we think that there were various alien races and factions. And in the ancient past, they all waged war on Earth, including nuclear exchanges in India,
right,
which became part of the Indian mythology of this god battling that god in the sky with chariots and all this kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
I don't think they would have mentioned the big alien wars, all the aliens that were coming to Earth, that there was many kinds and they were having a fight until season 10. But they only figured it out, I guess, in season 10. Now, the problem with this show, from a I need to watch it to entertain myself perspective, is that they ran out of actual topics sometime around season 6.
Generous assessment.
And since season 6, they're just redoing topics with a slight different perspective, but it's the same show.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is season 11, episode 1, which is very much like the Hidden Pyramids episode from season 4 or 5, but this one's called Pyramids of Antarctica.
Uh-huh.
Shit you not. The whole episode is based off one blurry, unresearched Google Maps screenshot that shows like a very square-ish mountain, snow-covered mountain from up top. So the conjecture is that this is actually a giant snow-covered pyramid in Antarctica. Therefore, wouldn't it make sense that there's actually many more buried under the snow and inside caverns on Antarctica?
Yeah.
Ancient astronaut theorists say yes.
Yeah, they do.
So those are my essential five. If you want to understand what Ancient Aliens is about, I want to give you a taste of some other ones I enjoy but didn't make the top five.
To just say, these are on Hulu. Hulu has 13 of the 15 seasons.
You can watch all of them on History Channel if you have a cable subscription.
Yes.
Season 3, episode 2, Aliens and Monsters. Hey, you know about the Minotaur, Medusa, the Hydra, all those things that are like a thing but two things? Probably aliens did that because they were bored. Like aliens had their Google 20% time where they didn't have to work on the company's project, so they got to do whatever they wanted. And they're like,
yeah,
I'm going to make a man bull and a snake lady. That's that episode.
Snake lady.
Season 4, episode 7, Aliens and Bigfoot, which lets us know that Goliath...
They took until 4 seasons in to get to Bigfoot?
Yeah, I have also seen that one. It will surprise no one to learn.
For an episode dedicated all about Bigfoot, surely they mentioned him and other zoocryptic creatures. Aliens and Bigfoot, the episode, just want to let you know that Goliath of David and Goliath was a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And Big Feet are aliens.
Okay.
So... The more you know.
Right.
Season 5, episode 10, The Van Dankian Legacy. That's the guy who did Chariots of the Gods.
Of course.
Which is this whole show is basically that.
Yeah.
Notable because they're just jizzing over this guy for the whole 40 minutes and how smart and innovative and what an outside thinker he was and how he's the truth merchant of the 20th century.
Right.
Season 6, episode 5, missing the correct episode by one. This should have been 6-6, is the Satan conspiracy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which wants to let you know that Satan was just a nice alien trying to help mankind out, yo. Season 8, 6, the Tesla experiment. In the show, there's we can't easily explain this, so aliens. When it comes to stuff they can't figure out in antiquity, like how did the stones get so close together in pyramids, brackets, people, must have been aliens because we can't figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
This is an episode about how Tesla's accomplishments were probably too good for us to really wrap our head around. So Tesla was definitely an alien or had access to an alien dude who was telling him how to do stuff.
Yep.
Problem with this, not Ancient Aliens.
Right.
Stick to your brand. That's modern aliens. Season 11, episode 11, space station moon, literally the line from Star Wars, "That's no moon, it's a space station, aliens made the moon." Season 12, episode 9, The Majestic 12, it's a 50s U.S. government think tank that advised Eisenhower on alien stuff. It comprised of scientists, military peeps, and guess what? Couple aliens.
What?
Yep. My last one is the Akashic Record. And this one's really out there. It's dumb even for ancient aliens. The gist of it is cloud computing is basically just an old alien ebook. Mm. And that's Ancient Aliens.
Wow.
Enjoy.
Well, follow that one, Sarah D. Bunting.
Fine. Law and Order SVU.
She did it!
Aliens. Okay, so as I was going through my, like, all-timer, like, basically these are Poppy Fields episodes, meaning that I'll just become becalmed and I have to keep watching them. Once I've started, they're always on somewhere, whether it's the channel or USA, but you can find them all on Hulu. But it became clear that the true, like, sweet spot of the show, now in its 21st season,
crazy,
God help us all, was about half a lifetime ago, right around seasons 8 through 10. There is a single SVU in the canon. There should be many more in the known act just for being bonko. That is season 10, episode 7, Wildlife, which David J. Roth got into the canon. It's the one where you may remember Kragen holding a monkey in a basketball.
Yeah.
Where it was being smuggled. The littlest special victims.
It's not so much that you remember it, is that you never forget it.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Indelible. I actually picked half a dozen because I just couldn't narrow it down. The only one that is outside the seasons 8 through 10 lane is the first one, season 6, episode 8. We referred to this on a recent Again With This, Billy Campbell versus Billy Campbell. Imagine Andrew Shue in this role, except please don't. It's called Doubt, and this is the Billy Campbell one where they really lean into the murky issues around consent. He said, she said, like what, how, the same information can be used, by their respective sides in the courtroom against or for or against the victim. And then you cut your credits before you hear the verdict. Like everybody stands up to hear it. And then it's executive producer, Dick Wolf, really well-made episode. Very thought-provoking. The second one is season 8, episode 21, Pretend, which is one of a pair of identity theft ones. This one is the James Hogue one. Interestingly, the cases that they pulled from, they gender-flipped both perps, I guess. So this is the one where there's like the 28-year-old teenager who basically, in addition to identity thieving.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Has also, in doing so, stat raped Luke from Joan of Arcadia. Mm-hmm. So that's that one. Now we're in season 9 with my third one, season 9, episode 2, that all-time fucking classic, Avatar, Vixie Platinum, Turn on the Sun. I've talked about this on Law & Order podcast, .. These are their stories. It's just so, it's like everything bad that makes mid-era SVU so watchable. Like, just the way they're still very baffled in an angry way by the internet.
Yep.
The weird things that are happening with Benson's hair that are just never explained or even referred to. And of course, God, why can't Kevin Tai, that's his name, who is like this middle aged, he's elderly now. He pretty much always plays a creeper when he's on one of these shows. And they actually brought him and his character back later.
Like, oh, yeah, that's right.
He has recurred. Mm-hmm. Excellent creepo. Hey, it's that. bad toucher and just a hilariously bad episode that I love, like it is a human relative. Season 9, Episode 8, Fight. This is the one where Smash from Friday Night Lights, the show, and his brother get into this whole, like, it's one of those SVUs that has, like, four different plots and then left turns by the 22-minute mark. But this is the one where their mom falls off the wagon and then Chester Lake, who I love, don't at me, is like, who wants to go to Red Lobster?
Yes!
That's how that one ends.
Yep.
In this episode, and I spotted this actor randomly in some like Blue Bloods rerun when I was visiting my parents in Florida last month, that there was a lot in that sentence. Don't just leave it in the suitcase. The woman who's like a fellow sex worker who's like extremely pregnant and talking to the detectives about one of them turning out this other woman who may have been the victim. I'm not sure. The character's name is Latrice. She's played by Stephanie Andujar. Stephanie Andujar has worked a little, but not anything that I've seen. And I found out she has her own web series where she plays a bunch of characters. And I regret to say that it is not good, but she is like really charismatic and watchable. And her 2.5 minutes in that episode were amazing. So please give Stephanie Andujar some work. Season 9, Episode 17, Authority. This is the 200th episode featuring Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Her writing is a little kludgy, but he's really good in it in this almost like disturbing way. Like some of it does not seem to be acting, this pain that the character is in. Basically, this is the headline this is ripped from is the same one as the movie Compliance, starring Ann Dowd. Mm-hmm. And there's really a lot of intense overacting by one Christopher Maloney about to return to the screen in this role, which is part of why I picked this show for everyone to catch up on and enjoy. Finally, Season 10, Episode 11, which is called Stranger. This is the identity theft one based on Frederick Bourdin,
yes,
where the kid who disappeared, like, in real life, it was, like, a French kid with different color eyes who's like, c'est moi! And they're like, what? We live in Texas.
Yep.
Anyway, in this case, it's a girl. There's, like, a ton of Broadway actors in this one, as well as, God, I can never remember this actor's name, but she was in While You Were Sleeping as Midge. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. I'm not going to get it until after we stop recording. Anyway, it's really well done. The number of times, like, don't do a drinking game with the word Erica. Just because it gets really bad. You will have to go to the hospital, and here's the problem. No room for you there. So drink responsibly.
Nicole Mercurio.
Nicole, maybe?
Well, according to IMDb, that's who you're thinking of.
Huh. Yeah, no, I never would have gotten that in a million years, but I'm sure you're right.
And after you watch that episode, find the documentary, The Imposter, which is based on the real case, which is really, really good.
Yes, it is really good. And that was based on a New York article written by, I believe, Mr. Tad Friend.
Was it? I thought it was John Colapinto. Anyways, one of them. It
could also have been David Gran.
You're right. It is David Gran.
We yes, are Dave. Fun at parties. Yeah, so that's my list. SVU... I mean, I think anywhere in season 9, you're probably fine. Like the Casey era is good, but it really like, it, you know, once Judith Light shows up, like as great as she is, that's when it starts to fall apart. And then once Stabler leaves, it's like, why are we here? And yet I'm still watching it. Tara.
Well, my show is Glow, surprising no one, because I've already submitted two episodes of it to the canon, neither of which is on this list. That's right, a 30-episode show to date, and I've picked five completely other episodes to tell you to watch, and here they are, in order. Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. This is where we meet mostly Ruth, played by Alison Brie, and Debbie, played by the luminous genius Betty Gilpin. I mean, Alison Brie is good too, but Betty Gilpin, what she does on the show is just beyond, and how she doesn't have an Emmy for every season, I surely do not know. But anyway, as the series is starting, they are friends, and the writing on their relationship plus their acting, like it, their friendship just feels so real and so lived in. Like, we see them at an aerobics class. Debbie is recently had a baby. She's still nursing, and Ruth has to tell her, like, you know, you're lactating. Like, it's just, they're very matter of fact about it. They're so natural. I love the two of them together, which is, spoiler, what makes it all the more devastating when things fall apart for the two of them. This episode is also rich with Ruth actress bullshit, which is one of my favorite things about the show.
Love it.
So good. Season 1, episode 9 is called The Liberal Chokehold. So by this point, we have met Bash, who's played by Chris Lowell. He is a canned food heir. He's producing the show, but he's almost out of money, which he's been like sort of sneaking out of his trust fund or his allowance or something. So in order to get enough for them to mount their first show, he and all of the wrestlers of GLOW, which is, of course, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, crash an anti-drug fundraiser at his Republican mother's house. This is the first time we've met her, although we've heard a lot about her. Her name is Birdie. She's played by Elizabeth Perkins, like, note perfect characterization of an 80s California Republican, like, just genius. Mm-hmm. The wrestlers all pretend to be recovered drug addicts, and they improvise sob stories to get the swells to give them money. It's amazing. Season 2, episode 1, Viking Funeral. A lot of things are changing. They're trying to mount the show on a weekly basis. This is also where we are introduced to Russell, eventual Ruth love interest, played by Victor Quinoz, late of The Chair.
Best.
For Sarah. We get a great fun sequences where they're shooting opening credits at the mall for the show. Ruth is not quite yet figuring out that she might be good at directing, but this is going to be an arc for her over the next couple of seasons. And also Debbie exercising her power behind the scenes in an interesting way that will also bear fruit over the episodes to come as well. Season 2, episode 6, Work the Leg. This is the one that aired before, the one that comes before the second canon presentation that I made. So everything at this point is on the line to save the show. They have to ratchet up the complexity and the aggression of their matches so that they don't get canceled. Sam, the director of the show, played by Marc Maron, has just found out that the president of the network sexually harassed Ruth. He attacks Tom's car, which is amazing, the president. And Debbie is all keyed up about her stupid ex-husband, Mark, played with perfect shittiness by Rich Summer.
He really is a gift.
He does it so well. So she finds coke in Sam's office. She does some before her match with Ruth, and then something terrible happens as a result of her not being able to control herself. And the sole episode from our most recent season, season 3, episode 5, Freaky Tuesday. At this point, it's not a TV show anymore now. It's a stage show in Vegas. The long-running kind of showgirl show has lost its director / choreographer. And even though it's supposed to be the last week of GLOW's run at this hotel, Sandy, the entertainment director at this hotel, is played by Gina Davis, also incredible, offers the show an extension through the end of the year, which is many more months at this point. Debbie doesn't want to do it because she's already spent so much time away from her son. So she comes up with a fun, air quotes, idea that is clearly secretly meant to tank the show, which is for all of the wrestlers to switch up their roles with one another. And just writing this out for my notes for this prep, I still get shivers thinking about it. I love, 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 love what they do with this part, with this episode. There's like a whole graduate drama thesis to be written about, you know, the meaning of this kind of carnival.
And all the like meta acting layers.
Yes.
And how much time they spend on actor bullshit. And yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. And on top of that, like, just there's the acting, but there's also like all of the physicality that goes into the wrestling, which, like, you know, I'm sure some of it is doubled, but some of it they are doing for real. And it's just so exciting to watch what this company of performers can do and then do in completely other roles on top of the roles that they are playing as their characters. It's amazing. It's probably that one is probably one of my favorite episodes of the entire series. So those are five episodes of GLOW to start out with.
Yeah, that ought to hold those little SOBs.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
This is the Extra Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 59, The Canton. I am Participation Trophy David T. Cole, and I'm here with Attendance Award Sarah D. Bunting.
Present.
And first runner-up, Tara Ariano.
Oh. Clap, 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 clap.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Extra Extra Hot Great, just for our Patreon patrons. Thank you so much for your support. As we periodically do around here, we are featuring a topic from one of you, namely from Seth White, who writes, since this feed is a little looser than EHG Prime, that's what she said, talk about your favorite episodes of a show that for some reason would never make it into the canon and why they have that connection. For example, he continues, when I was flu delirious and stuck in bed for a few days, I binged season 4 of Angel, which has a notoriously bad string of episodes with Gina Torres and Pete Campbell. The bonkers fever dream quality of those episodes combined with my NyQuil K-hole was uniquely memorable. At any rate, such a feature could be called the Canton. End quote. I will begin because many years ago, I also flu-binged Angel Season 4. This involved getting up to change VCR cassettes. Is that how long ago this was? Yeah. Anyway, when my fever broke, I wrote the season up for Tomato Nation, and boy, was I not impressed. But I really had to write it up for a blog so that I could confirm that it was terrible. And it wasn't just I feel like shit. And also, why is Charisma Carpenter always behind a mattress? This is weird. Anyway, my nomination for this is Judging Amy, which is not quite a hotel show. The kind you watch between the ceremony and the reception. But if you're at home and you have a full TV guide / DVR, you wouldn't bother with it. But at a certain time in my life, when Judging Amy was on in the afternoons, it was wedged into the middle of some 3-hour block on, I don't think it was A&E.
It was TNT, I think.
Yes, thank you. I think it was maybe TNT. I did find it very soothing. The actors were all lovely, but also actually looked like people who might, in fact, work in a courthouse. The maternal badass presence of Tyne Daly's Maxine was just what I needed at that time. I have bitched many times before in several different venues that is not marathonable on basic cable, the better for me to ogle young Dan Futterman, and it still isn't. It isn't on streaming. You can't buy DVDs. You can't even buy VHS tapes. I looked. I don't get it. This is the perfect time for a show like this, in my opinion, in the world we live in now. But mine is Judging Amy because I think all the episodes are fairly uniform in construction, in outcome. They are predictable. Sometimes there's stuff. It's never going to be great. It's not even Bosch, but it scratches a certain itch. So that one is mine.
It's not even what?
I actually have it written out like that in my notes. It's not possible for me to just type Bosch anymore. There's 15 buh-buh-buhs before it. Tara.
Well, this is hard for me since, as listeners of the main podcast know, I will try it with just about any show I like and have with B-minus shows, including Mom, The King of Queens, and The New Adventures of Old Christine. But instead of talking about series that I don't think are canon worthy, I have individual episodes. So here are my picks for ones where it's if there were a Cantonin, that I would possibly try to make a pitch for these individual episodes. So, okay. Desus and Marrow, Dave, I would go with the John Mulaney episode. I think you and I would both agree. The interview is not the strongest segment of Desus and Marrow, a fine, fine late night talk show on Showtime. But the John Mulaney interview is a delight because he is a great subject, is having so much fun, is fun and game and like keeps up with them. The problem is that you don't really get the sense of that in the version of the interview that actually airs. You have to actually watch the extended interview, which is like three times as long right. on yeah. YouTube, which Ooh. We did. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely worth doing. But the version on the episode is like good, but it's, you know, it's only fine in comparison to the extended interview. So that's one. That was probably my favorite interview they've ever done. I would also try to hunt up, and much like Judging Amy, these are hard to find, but any episode of What Not to Wear of the TLC series, now defunct and not findable anywhere, possibly because Stacey and Clinton like hate each other in real life, like poisonously or in a feud now. But any episode of that.
I still can't get over that.
I know.
Every time it comes up, which is not often, I'm like, oh yeah, what happened? Someone write a book.
Yeah. But any episode of that show in which the contributor, which is what they call the subject of the makeover, was nominated by friends but really thought they looked great. There are two kinds of people on What Not to Wear. There's the ones where they just look like kind of dowdy and need help, like boosting their personal style, and the ones where they dress crazy. They just are doing yeah. too much all the time and they get nominated because the people in their lives are like, you can't drive carpool in a micro mini dress. Like, sorry. But those are the ones that usually are like, no, I look great. And they don't want to take any advice. And sometimes at the end of the process, they still don't. And like they have bought all of the wrong things and just like refuse to take it. And those are the best ones because then Stacey and Clinton are like mad and disappointed and it's great. And finally... an episode of the show I cannot even watch anymore, but that at one time in my life I really treasured, and that show is Catfish. Now, at the time, we did not know that Neve Schulman was allegedly a bad person, and I will not get into the reasons why, but you can Google him and find out. But we did an episode that was a season premiere called Antoine and Tony, and this was one where a woman named Carmen had written into the show on behalf of her cousin Antoine because he was in a relationship with someone named Tony and it was all very shady and she just wanted to help him get to the bottom of it. And they did all their research and they drove around. They thought they found the address. They ended up on a cold street and they were just looking around. Where was Tony? Is this address even real? And finally they cut back to Carmen and she says, "You should have never called me a fat ass Kelly Price because Carmen was Tony and she orchestrated this whole thing and like planned it with the precision of like a long con artist to embarrass Antoine on TV. Is this a good person? No. Should this person be rewarded with screen time? No. Am I a good person for watching it and like remembering it to this day, all these years later? No, of course not. I'm a bad person." Was that a great episode of Catfish, though? Yes. I still remember it.
Was the Two Old Hookers theme song great? Yes. Does that woman need to work in corporate, like, countermeasures, yeah. security countermeasures? Yes, she does.
Yeah, she does. She said that herself. And she was completely unrepentant afterwards, too. So,
yeah, that was the best part.
Yeah.
But you've kept being like, but don't you have... something to say about how you're sorry, and she's like, no. "Fuck that!" No. That was great.
He shouldn't have called her a fat ass Kelly Price. So yeah, Antoine and Tony, that episode of Catfish in the can. Dave,
but why is it in the like? What is it about it that
it was just amazing? It was like it was turned like we.
Why
never...
would it never get in the canon?
Oh, because Catfish is a terrible show.
Got it.
It's not
too craven it's an not experience an, to be in to get an accolade.
Is that yes, I mean can't. I mean not to say that we haven't you know that we wouldn't induct a reality show. Of course, we absolutely have. But I would never present a Catfish now because I feel morally compromised by it. because of the people involved, it makes me feel bad to watch it now. And this,
oh yeah, you know, there are actually a couple of really good Leverage episodes, yeah. And I considered pitching the DB Cooper one for the canon, mostly to bug Dave. It would be my King of Queens, I guess.
but now you can't, allegedly. Yeah. All right, Dave.
All right. Well, first, let me do like not what he asked, just because it came to mind when he did it, which is a show I actually discovered and picked up and thoroughly enjoyed because as he was had Angel Flu, I had this. I had to go back to Toronto one summer and it was just like such a shitty summer. I was depressed. Like Tara was still in New York. I was like in this shitty rental. Like this was before Airbnb. So you just had like to find things. And it was just like the cable was spotty. The internet was pretty much non-existent. I was just like in the shitty part of town. It was crap, crap, crap. I had nothing to do. There was like a 2-inch TV somehow in this place. They managed to find a 2-inch TV. So I went, walked down to the retail area from where I was, and I just went to the HMV or whatever it was around there, took a leap on this thing I heard about that somebody may have said it was okay. It was the Venture Brothers. So I bought like the season one DVD because it was on sale and took it back and watched it on my laptop probably and really, really liked it. So I went back and got season two and then season three. So it was sort of like the opposite. Like I have really good associations with that because of a really shitty time. It was like the one thing that I could do at night that didn't make me want to go to bed early in order to end the day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was Venture a bad year. So that is in the we can do it non. So for my actually can't nons, I have two and they're similar, very different time periods. And it basically boils down to, and this is like really petty, like on a personal level, but it really boils down to I cannot stand the fandom, so I can't stand the show now. Like it is forever tainted. And the earliest example, and I'll throw an apology in here because I was like in my 20s and a lot bigger of an asshole than I am now.
And it's true.
In that way that everybody in their 20s was versus, you know, when they're not. But the Farscape people on Television Without Pity fucking annoyed me to no end. Like, always nagging me, recap it. And it was like the same five people over and over again. I'm like, dude, it's just not there. Like, you know, anyways, so it just kind of like festered to the point where I would like needle them back because they just pissed me off so much. And it got really toxic. And like, we would do those... those what are we recapping this September like flash animations, and I would like make it seem like we're doing Farscape, but we actually weren't. Like, this is a really big jerk.
I forgot about that. Sorry, Farscape people.
Yeah. So I don't think I've seen one episode of Farscape. No. I know I'm not gonna like it because I don't like that kind of show, but
no, you're really not. I edited the recaps when we finally consented to do them, and puppets in space. Yeah. Eh.
So yeah, so that was one of them, and I think like the modern day for that is any guesses?
Doctor Who.
No, I don't like Doctor Who that much. Like, I would never seek it out. There's certain episodes that've been like, yeah, all right. And you know, I like the Weeping Angel one. That was fun. But
sure.
Otherwise, no.
Okay.
Oh, you mean the fandom ruining it?
Oh,
well, just a fandom making
Westworld.
Rick and Morty. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
just like
yeah.
Anybody I cross paths with that is like, Rick and Morty. I'm like, I don't want to know you. I'm not saying I don't want to know you because you like Rick or Morty, but they come up to me sight unseen. I don't know who you are. You start talking Rick and Morty. I now see everything about your life and how much I hate you. You and your pickle Ricks and your Szechuan sauces and whatnot. I just
it's like if you already love someone and they have like terrible spelling and grammar.
Yeah.
It's just me. Then it's fine. But if that's the first thing you see on OKCupid, it's like, boy.
Yeah.
Look, the whole point of this is bad reasons why certain things will never get into the canon as far as you're concerned. And I think those are two really good bad reasons.
Yeah.
Is petty, is personal.
No, I agree.
It's vindictive. Mm-hmm. It's all the wrong reasons why you should not consume a piece of pop culture.
Right.
But is forever tainted. And I just don't want to be... Like, it's one of those sort of like get off my team sort of vibes. Like, I don't want to be on your team now because you guys really annoy me. This is the Extra Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 64, 3 with Mustard. I am Mysterious Schwa David T. Cole, and I'm here with Fricative Sarah D. Bunting.
Fuck off.
And Hard Constant Dara Ariano.
Present. Welcome, Patreon supporters. Thank you so much for being here and for your support. This topic comes to us from Doug Dale. He submitted our canon on Are You the One? Originally, this was an extra credit, but with his permission, we have promoted it to Extra Extra Hot Great Topic because we wanted to do clips and we didn't want to make a guest have to come up with clips for this. So that was the reason, though. We're doing this here instead. And Doug writes, with theaters temporarily shuttered, diction and pronunciation in television is more important than ever. Make a short list of the greatest word pronunciations in TV history and which characters felt the need to add that extra bit of mustard to their speech. As an example, he offered, one of the ones he offered was the way the hormone monstrous from Big Mouth says, bubble bath. So we each have a few clips. I'm going to go around the circle so that we end without too in a balanced way. I will therefore go first. Dave, can you please play my first clip?
Matt.
That is Mara Wilson from Melrose Place saying the word Matt with the crispest T you ever did hear.
Matt. Oh, yeah.
Matt.
Sounds so like a cute computer.
Yeah.
It sounds like, you know, if Knight Rider had a lady kit, it'd be like, you know.
Oh. Matt.
Yeah. We called it out at the time on Again With This, but so we that did. Was why it was still fresh in my mind. I declined to do Billy saying manicure instead of manicure, but yes.
Oh, God.
Mara Wilson's Matt on Melrose Place. Gotta love it. Sarah, why don't you go next?
I completely forgot all of Vincent Young's many misfires and also Hawthorne. Anyway, there are like a million that I could have taken from this show, which of course is The Sopranos. Polly Walnuts' Fuck It Baby is like a ringtone that I want to get tattooed on my face, but it took me a minute of brainstorming to actually get to this one. It's from the last season. During Bunting Family Card Games, you hear, first of all, when a bad hand is dealt, the hormone monster is saying, get reeled. And then you hear this one. To set the scene, Christopher and Little Carmine have just been out in L.A. trying to get Sir Ben Kingsley to star in Cleaver. Hasn't gone terribly well, and as everyone's filing onto the flight home, imagine Kingsley's dismay when he sees that the wise guys are also in first class. Actually, there's no need to imagine it. Clip one, please, Dave.
I had no idea. It's another flight.
Fuck.
I actually was surprised that it was that short because it, in our redoing of it, is just dragged out over like 8 seconds. Fuck. So good. There's a reason that he's Sir and we're just guys.
Nice.
So that's my first one.
All right, well, I'll go next so that we can then go around the horn. Mine is another one from the Darren Starverse. Dave, please play clip 2.
Let's get one thing straight. I have never had a cappuccino.
He's never had a cappuccino, does not even know how to pronounce it. Says it like it's a cup of chino. That is Steve Sanders, of course, from season 4 of Beverly Hills 90210 when his closeted gay fraternity president has just been discovered at a gay coffee house, apparently a thing, and spotted Steve and Brandon there, drew the wrong conclusion, and Steve has to angrily tell him he has never had a cappuccino. Really a mispronunciation, but still one I remember to this day. Dave.
This is the first thing I thought of. This is like a really old Saturday Night Live skit with Jimmy Smith and Dana Carvey, Phil Hartman, and Mike Myers.
Antonio, you're welcome to have my chili con carne.
No, thanks. Say, you guys really like Latino food, huh?
Well, you know, I grew up in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
hey, guys.
Hey, bro!
Oh,
had some enchiladas.
Oh, man. We've got some dynamite chimichangas, too.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great. Can I dig in?
Sure.
Bob, this is our economics correspondent, Antonio Mendoza.
Hi.
Antonio Mendoza.
Well, nice
Antonio,
to meet you.
Antonio. Bob Costas.
Nice to see you. Okay. So, Bob, have you got any hot picks for us this weekend?
Well, I like the Broncos. The Broncos? You're nuts. No way the Broncos beat San Diego in San Diego. You're out of your mind.
Oh, fine. And this is the guy who picked Tampa Bay by 6 over San Francisco.
Okay. And Jimmy Smith just gets more and more angry as the skit goes along, starts pounding the desk, tries to ask for an enchilada, but nobody understands what he's saying until he goes over the top.
Nice.
Saturday Night Live, it's got to be like 20 years old, maybe 25 years old by now, but
Very nice.
It stuck with me. So it was the first thing I wanted to clip.
Excellent. Sarah.
Well, I could have called for half of Bess Armstrong's line readings from the weekend episode of My So-Called Life, starting with something that I say to myself every time I announce that I did some tiny, dumb shit really well and no one cares, which is, I made a swan. Aw, honey, you said hooch is another favorite of mine. John Ramos, hello. But I went with another legendary reading from the same show, but a different episode. This one is A.J. Langer as Rayanne at the end of On the Wagon. It remains, thanks to this line reading, impossible for me to say this actor's name in any way except the way that Rayanne says it. Unfortunately, Angela and Ricky kind of talk over her at the end, but it's the first bit that counts. You will get the idea. Clip 2.
I like Latin guys.
Like me?
Like Andy Garcia.
Oh my God, in that movie where that girl is like blind.
Andy Garcia. It's the only way to say it. Tara.
All right. Dave, please play clip 3.
We now at Goop. We now at Goop.
That's it. That's the clip. That's the editorial director of Goop from the Goop Lad saying Goop in the most California way ever. Goop. It's the way that communicates what kind of show you're getting into. She doesn't say Goop like a normal person. She says Goop like it's spelled G-E-U-P.
Oh, God. Goop.
Goop. Dave.
So the word that's spoken in this clip doesn't come up in conversation or in the public that much. But when it does, it always must be delivered in this manner.
Okay, so you want to re-record in the ocean? In. I see.
Yeah.
No problem.
No, not in the ocean. Inside the ocean.
Okay.
In the heaviest, deepest, most brutal part.
All right.
The Mariana Trench.
Well, let me make the call.
Dave is correct. That's the only way you can say it.
It is the only way I will say it from now
Nathan
on.
Explosion from Metalocalypse.
Amazing.
Such a dumb show.
So
but
good.
That was like the number one part of that show for me. And yeah, whenever that is mentioned, you always have to pause for a minute and correct the pronunciation because it can only be pronounced the Mariana Trench.
Sarah.
As befits its status as the trenchiest trench, I tried and tried to pull a clip of Scott Speedman as Ben Covington calling Javier, but it was really threatening to run out of time. So he has other easier to find pleasures to offer, like the extremely chewy, curt, and Saxon way this character calls people dicks. Exhibit A, clip 3.
Really? What percentage of parents stay together, Greg?
What's your problem?
My problem is that 63% of me thinks you're a dick.
Guys!
Dick. It's so good. I say that one all the time, too, including the 63% part, just to the cats.
Amazing.
Tara.
I mean, while we're there, let's give a shout out to the Family Feud dick guy, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a good one. We use it all the time. I'm sure you know.
Well, yeah. If ever you're, if ever that dick is not available to you, give the other one a ride.
And just in case you don't know what we're talking about, here it is in full context.
Give me a slang name for policeman.
Dick.
So good.
Yeah.
Never don't love it. Oh my God.
So yeah, season 3, the gang from Insecure goes to Coachella. Mistakes are made, drugs are taken, a brawl breaks out. Kelly, one of my favorite characters, played by Natasha Rothwell, causes a ruckus, gets tased by a security guard, falls over, is gyrating on the ground, pees her pants, and then says this, clip four.
Remember me different.
In case you couldn't make that out, that's remember me different.
Oh, God. That's good.
It's really, really funny. Such a good episode, but that scene especially, one of my favorite Kelly moments. Remember me different. I wish I could, but I will not. Sorry, Kelly.
No.
Back to Dave.
All right. My last one is a tour de force of pronunciation quirks.
Yeah, just to be clear, so these will be heard on every submarine in the Royal Navy.
Yeah, they're just automating and digitizing everything. You know, the commander presses a button and the recording of your voice will be heard immediately.
Yeah, I'm not interested in all that. Can we just crack on? Fire the nuclear weapons!
Stephen, that was good. But you think you could give it another try, this time say it in a less alarming way?
Less alarming? I've just given the order to fire the nuclear weapons. I've just unleashed Armageddon.
Yes, but the feeling here is that you could do it in a way which is a little less dramatic. It's just a little bit over the top at the moment. Have fun with it.
Fire the nuclear weapons.
That was a little bit too far the other way, a bit too jolly. Yeah, when you just try a few more times.
Fire the nuclear weapons. Fire the nuclear weapons. Fire the nuclear weapons! Fire the nuclear weapons! Fire the nuclear weapons!
Do you want to move on to the next one, Stephen? We can come back to that later.
Abandon the vessel immediately.
Oh, God. That's Stephen Toast from Toast of London.
Of course.
You could go on forever with all the things he does there. God. The one thing that didn't have is just his end of sentence thing he does.
Yes.
Weapons.
Was obviously the first one I went to. I played that last because I figured Tara might have him too, and I don't want to duplicate. You gave that one to me, did you? Okay.
I did. All right, Sarah, what's your last one?
Whenever we're having tech problems on the Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs podcast, behooves the producer not merely to say grr or arg, but to sing them both in the style of the Buffy the Vampire Slayer production card monster from the end of the musical episode, clip four.
Arg!
It's very good.
A little too high for me, but I make it work. And that's all mine.
All right. Well, let's just walk straight up to mine because I feel like everyone is expecting it. Please play clip five.
We need Tracy back, but all Angie cares about her own dumb projects. Devon told me she's the new spokeswoman for the Ham Council.
People do like the way she says ham.
Ham!
Classic.
That is Sherry Shepherd as Angie Jordan saying ham. People do love the way she says it, including me. If you go on the internet, you can find any number of loops of hams, and so Dave, perhaps that can take us out because I clipped a little bit of one of those. That is my clip six. Thank you to Doug for this topic. Thank you to our Patreons.
Ham, 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 ham,
down periscope.